Yeah, I think it's a good initiative that you are taking. I think we, as a country, we need to be discussing these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically OPEC is, hello?
Yeah, we are listening, yeah.
Yeah, so basically OPEC stands for the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries. And what OPEC is basically an association of countries that produce crude oil.
Mm-hmm.
So crude oil is the raw material from which the petroleum products like diesel, petrol, jet A1, etc. Those petroleum products are kerosene, etc. They are produced from a raw material which is called crude oil.
Mm-hmm.
So now OPEC is basically an association of countries, major producers of this crude oil. So what then OPEC does is they work together to influence, or rather to determine the volumes of crude oil which are produced. So by influencing inventories of volumes, that has an effect on the prices of crude oil and ultimately on the prices of refined products, because refined petroleum products are derived from the crude oil. So once you influence the prices of crude oil, it means you also influence the price of refined petroleum products. And this OPEC is doing because it's in the interest of the OPEC government,
mm-hmm.
Because OPEC governments derive revenue from selling crude oil. So this crude oil is a resource for these countries, and they want to have an influence on the prices of crude because it entails revenue for these governments. So these governments, you find that they have huge budgets, for national budgets for their countries, which are financed by revenue derived from this national resource, which is crude. So in a nutshell, basically that is what OPEC is all about.
Probably just to simplify that, you mentioned crude oil there. What is crude oil? Just to add on that, do we have different types of oil?
Yeah, so crude oil is a hydrocarbon. So this hydrocarbon is then the raw material. You find it deep in the ground. That's why you have to drill wells to go to that crude oil to extract it from these wells. So once it comes out of the ground, you then refine it for you to you heat it up. So there's a whole refining process that takes place for you to derive refined petroleum products, like your diesels, your jet fuels, your petrols, etc. So the crude oil, there are various types of crude oils. They are named like heavy crude oil. So heavy crude oil, it means it takes a lot of processing for you to get refined petroleum products out of it. Or if for lack of a better word, it's dirty. That's heavy crude oil. And then you have your light crude oil, sweet crude oil. So this one is much more cleaner as a hydrocarbon. It's much more cleaner, so it doesn't take a lot of processing during the refining process. So and hydrocarbons are because of the geology where you find them. For example, the hydrocarbons that you will find in Nigeria will be different from the hydrocarbons that you find in Venezuela. They will be different from the hydrocarbons that you find in Saudi Arabia, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Because of geological factors. But basically that is what crude oil is all about.
Looking at this OPEC organization, or as an organization, it's actually an organization that was established quite long ago, in the early 1960s there, and most of its members in the Middle East. I understand we have 7 members of OPEC in Africa at the moment. Can you tell us how this, all this country have joined together? How do one as a member of OPEC, how do they benefit? How do they give their oil to OPEC? How is the trading there between the members and other countries which are not members? Me as a member, if Namibia is to become a member, do we expect, what are the benefits are we going to expect from OPEC? But first, what is how do they trade? Or yeah, how do they trade with its own members?
Yeah, that's a fair question, because it then clarity, because it clarity will then be provided, because what the oil does not go to OPEC per se. So like I said at the beginning, OPEC is basically just an organization to discuss policies related to the petroleum industry. So what then these countries do is, during the OPEC discussions, mm-hmm. allocations are then made to say that looking at various factors in the world based on demand and supply. Because, for example, if you look during the time of COVID-19, mm-hmm. During that time, the demand for petroleum products was very low. So it will not make financial sense for you to produce a lot of crude oil while global demand for that crude oil is low. So it can only make sense then for the OPEC members to come together and agree on production quantities or production targets, to say that the world is currently experiencing this issue of COVID-19. Aeroplanes are no longer flying. People are no longer traveling. So the demand for petroleum during this time of COVID is very low. So as OPEC, we need to cut production. Because if you increase production during a time of low demand, it means the scarcity. So what OPEC does at times is create artificial scarcity in the market. And scarcity usually entails higher prices. Because remember, these OPEC governments derive revenues for their national budgets from selling crude.
Mm-hmm.
So the benefits is then for these oil producers to coordinate on production quantities of crude oil or production targets, so that they can maximize their profits. It's only by maximizing profits that these countries are able to finance their national budgets or provide money for their national budgets. Because it would be counterproductive. Assuming there was no OPEC, you will find that while Saudi Arabia is trying to cut production, for example, Venezuela is increasing production. So you won't have that desired artificial scarcity in the market for the prices to go up or for them to remain constant. So you can derive revenue for your national budget. So these are some of the benefits. It's to coordinate policy around production of crude oil mainly. But not all crude oil producers are members of OPEC.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have also recently heard of Angola pulling out, I think it was last year,
yeah.
Deciding to pull out of OPEC. So there are also issues there. There are non-compliance issues. You can agree on certain production targets to say that, for example, Nigeria, your quota, your production quota is this much. Only for the Nigerians to produce more, they pass the allocated. So this create issues as far as prices are concerned, and it affects revenue for these members. So there are also issues in OPEC. So for us as a country in Namibia, I think before that decision to either join or not join can be made,
mm-hmm.
All these pros and cons will then have to be weighed, carefully weighed. You need to conduct careful cost-benefit analysis so you can have a full understanding of what are my benefits and what are the drawbacks if Namibia as a country was to join OPEC. So these are the issues.
Yeah, maybe just to, if you can able to touch on that, Angola is our neighboring country, and when the disagreement between Russia and Ukraine have begun, the oil price have been fluctuating in Namibia, which drove a lot of Namibians to go buy oil from Angola because it's quite cheap there. It's quite cheap there. And a lot of people have been also come out to say that why can't we start getting oil from Angola rather than getting oil from the Middle East, which is quite expensive, but we have a cheap oil here. Probably to touch on Angola withdrawal from OPEC, do you have an idea or what do you think? What is happening in between there? Why Angola have to withdraw from OPEC?
Yeah, the main reason why Angola withdrew from OPEC is the allocated volumes, because as a member of OPEC, during the negotiations, every member is then allocated volumes to say that the day you are going to produce, for example, 1 million barrels of crude. So I think what Angola was unhappy with is the amount which was allocated to it. I think it was too low. Angola was allocated a low amount of crude oil to produce. And that low amount of crude oil which was allocated to it entails low revenue for the country. So, and I mean, all countries have pressing national needs. Citizens are asking for services from the government, and government can only cater for those services that the citizens are demanding for through the national budget. So these OPEC members mainly derive revenues from crude. So if as a country you cannot derive sufficient revenues from your resources to cater for your national needs, mm-hmm. of your citizens, it will create political problems at home. So I think that was the issue that led to the withdrawal of Angola from OPEC.
Yeah. Master Ekanjo, looking at the situation, I was acquitting myself with the situation in Nigeria. Nigeria being one of the oil producer in the world, and second, I think, in Africa after Libya. But they still send their oil to India for refinery and other things. And Libya also do the same thing. But them being the major producer of oil, the situation in Nigeria didn't change when it's coming to the higher rate of unemployment and the living standard of people. My question is, what can it take for a certain country to stand up for itself, being rich in oil, or in any other natural resources, but let's look at in the context of oil. For a certain country to stand up for itself, produce its own oil, and produce it to the... What is the process? What is the process of a certain country to produce its oil until it get into the market? Or one country cannot make it on its own?
Yeah, I mean, for you need to get your policies right as a country. First and foremost, you need to have your policies right. So I think for when it comes to oil, if you want to derive maximum benefits from your oil throughout the whole value chain, where you are exploring it yourself, you are producing it, you are refining it, and you are consuming it yourself, then obviously you have to prioritize investment in the oil sector throughout the whole value chain. So you need to prioritize those investments in exploration, prioritize investments in production, as well as invest in refineries. And then you also have to put up all the associated infrastructures, because these are huge investments. And sometimes you might find that governments alone might not be able or might not have the capacity, whether it's in terms of the financial and technical capacities,
mm-hmm.
to pull off these huge projects. So that's why you find that sometimes countries have resources, but these resources are sent out in raw form to other countries, because unfortunately that's where you have the technical know-how, that's where investments are being made. That must not mean you cannot stand your ground,
mm-hmm.
to insist that things must be done in your country. So it all boils down to the policy level. That's where you need to sort out those issues.
America is one of the oil producers in the world, but they are not members of OPEC. I want us to know who is the master of everything here. Some countries are producers of oil, but they are not members of OPEC, and there are those that are members of OPEC, and those that are members of OPEC are also not getting the benefit that probably they thought they could have, they can get. Like I mentioned, Nigeria, the DRC situation is not at hand. I mean, it's out of hand ever since the colonial era. A lot of countries have found themselves in conflict with countries such as America due to oil. What is the stand of oil in the world when it's coming to developed country and developing country? Where is our space? Where can we navigate everything? Or what is our say?
Yeah, I mean, it's developed nations and developing countries. So in terms of the developed nations, first and foremost, they have the technical know-how, and they have the financial capacity to put things in, to invest in infrastructures, and also to invest in mega projects to pull off these mega projects. So that's the main difference between developing and developed countries. So for us as developing countries, we engage in of compromises. So for example, you want to pull off a certain project that you think will be beneficial for your country, but technical know-how is a challenge, financial capacity is a challenge. So for you to address those, there will be a lot of compromises that you have to make as a country.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like you had mentioned, the oil being sent to other countries to be refined there. Is because the capacity here locally is missing. So those are some of the compromises that we have to make just for us to at least get a certain amount of benefit from these resources. So I think it would be unfair to compare developed and developing countries, although that must not process developing countries to aim for better things.
As we are speaking now, there are these multinational companies that are discovering oil in Namibia, the likes of Shell and Total, and the current one that have just discovered at Orange Basin, the Portuguese company. How is our future look like? What can you tell a Namibian? What can we do us as Namibia? Like at the moment, by looking at the percentage, it says that the newly discovered oil, the state company, which is NAMCO, they stand a chance of having 10%, where the multinational company have a chance of standing at 80%, because they are the owner. They are it's because of the ownership of what they have discovered. And I know for sure this is not going to the process can start now, but the extraction of oil from the ground or from underground probably is going to take probably a decade or something. Maybe we still have a chance and an opportunity to put ourselves together, to probably have a small capacity to make some differences compared to what we have done in the past. And you being in this industry, you traveled here and there, maybe you have a better picture of what Namibia can do as a nation, us as Namibians. What do you think we can do, young people, old people, those that are in industry, those that are still trying to find out of what is exactly happening in the world? What can we do for us probably tomorrow to stand a better chance, also to have a better participation in our natural resources?
Yeah, so I think your question has two aspects. The first one is the 10% share of NAMCO in the oil blocks, and then the second is what Namibians can then do to benefit from the oil and gas sector.
Yeah.
So on the first one, I think it's something we keep sharing with the public, that the benefits that Namibia is deriving from these oil blocks are not only limited to the 10% carried interest. By the way, it's carried interest of NAMCO in these oil blocks, because there are also royalties which are charged on these petroleum resources, because they belong to Namibia. So the government, once production starts, the government needs to start charging royalties on these petroleum products. These companies will be paying corporate income tax in the country, because they are companies, they are corporations, they have to pay corporate income tax. So these companies are leasing the oil blocks. So you when you are operating in these oil blocks, you are not just operating there free of charge. You have to lease these oil blocks from the government. So, and these oil companies that are operating the oil blocks, they also contribute massively to Petrofan. So many Namibians have been sent overseas. A lot of investment has gone into education, oil and gas sector education through Petrofan. And the budget or the capacity of Petrofan to be able to send these Namibians overseas to train them in the oil and gas sector is mainly through funds which are collected from these oil companies. So, and also in terms of the value chain. So just imagine a company bringing a rig to Namibia, for example. This rig requires fuel. So the fuel is, we insist that the fuel must be sourced locally. The rig will spend a lot of time at sea, so you need to provide for catering for the people that are working on these rigs. So we insist that some of these basic things like fuel for the rig, catering for the staff on the rig, etc., these basic things, they must be sourced locally. And also in terms of jobs that Namibians can do, especially on these rigs and in the oil and gas sector in general. The insistence of government is that where Namibians have the capacity to do these things, oil companies must employ Namibians to do these things. So there's an entire value chain of activities to then also answer your second question on how Namibians can benefit from the oil and gas sector. So there's an entire list of activities throughout the value chain that Namibians can capitalize on. So first and foremost, you at least need to capacitate yourself as a Namibian in terms of education, because you also don't want to go into an industry where you at least don't have a basic understanding of what the oil and gas sector is all about. And then also this local content policy that the ministry has been taking to the regions recently is also then insisting on having local ownership in these oil blocks, so that Namibians can benefit from these resources.
At the moment, as I'm talking to you now, where do we get our oil from?
You mean in terms of the refined oil? Currently, our refined oil is coming from mainly three regions of the world. We have the Asian region, mainly from countries like Singapore and India. We have the Arab Gulf or the Persian Gulf region. So there you mainly get from countries like the UAE, the likes of Qatar. So those countries in the Persian or Arab Gulf, and then also from the Mediterranean Sea area. So we also get a bit of fuel from refined petroleum from Europe. So but the majority, as we look into the trade flows, of these petroleum products is mainly from Asia and the Persian or Arab Gulf region.
As we are talking now, Master Ikanjoy, it seems like the world is facing now energy transition. At the moment, there is a green hydrogen that has been being championed by even our lady president, and the whole world is coming to Namibia for this green hydrogen. Everybody, most of the developed countries, want to take part in a green hydrogen, and at the same time, we are discovering oil. How is our future look like from your point of view, having green hydrogen on the other side and discovering oil again? I want us to look at this and with in our context and a picture of Congo in our mind also. Congo being the richest country in the world, as they said, but again, a poorest country when it's coming to reality.
Yeah, I fully understand the beneficiation issues that you are talking about, because at the end of the day, you, as a country, you want to derive maximum benefits from your resources.
Mm-hmm.
And it all boils down to your policies and then your laws or your regulations. So those things need to be clear. They need to be clear to investors, and they need to be clear to the public, your citizens. Because once policy is not clear, your laws are not clear, then investors will also not have the confidence to come to your country and take the risk. Because from the perspective of the investor, they are taking huge risks, financial risks, into some of these projects. And if things, policy is not clear, regulations are not clear, they might end up losing their investments, which is also not good for them. Because if investors are not benefiting, then the country or citizens will also not benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So you now need to find a win-win formula. Investors must benefit, and your citizens must then also benefit. But in as far as the green hydrogen and the oil and gas are concerned, I think as a country we have a lot of potential in those sectors, and I think the future of the country is very, very promising. We just need to ensure that we manage it well as far as policy and laws are concerned. Then everyone will benefit, both our citizens and the investors that are putting up the investments in these projects.
Mm-hmm. You emphasize quite much on the case of policies and the laws. I probably finally I want us to conclude with the standard of education. I'm always trying to look at this from this perspective and to say that when it's coming to our natural resources, we do have a lot of investors from European countries or from developed countries, so to say, mostly from Europe, America, and Asia. Surprisingly, some of these countries that are coming to invest in our country, in Namibia, in African countries, they don't have the commodity that we have here. They don't have the natural resources that we have here. But their standard of education, it's quite big. It's quite huge. It's on the other level. So you have mining schools in Germany. You have mining school in Austria. You have mining school in Britain. Yet in this country, they don't have mines, gold mining that are going on there. You have people that are studying about mining and oil and gas just to come and explore and discover these things in Africa. We also have education here, and our education system that we are using here, we inherited from them. looking at the standard of our education, what is your take? What can we do also, not only by sending some individual outside the country, but also what can we do within our country so that when this opportunity are coming, we are ready and we can able to take up the job?
Yeah, correct. Education is one of the most variables as far as exploiting our resources is concerned. So without education, you can never derive maximum benefits from your resources as a country. But the comparison that you made there, I think it would be a bit unfair, because if you were to search when the first university in the United Kingdom, for example, was established, very long time ago. So what I'm trying to say is these developed nations, they came a very, very long way with their education systems. As a country, we are currently in our 34th year of independence. And if you were to look up when the first university in England was established, you will be very... So the roots of education in some of these countries are very, very deep. But that does not mean we can also not do a lot to try and catch up with some of these countries, because our benefit is that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. So we can always learn from best practices, and we have been doing exactly that. That's why we have been sending out Namibians to go out there and learn and then come home, so we can then also then have our local capacities here. And I mean, it's no surprise that government has been pumping a lot of money in education in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we want to exactly achieve those objectives that you have highlighted there.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Master Abednego, if there's something that I didn't ask you and you just wanted to add it, just your final words.
Yeah, in terms of final words, I think it's good that India is having this engagement with the ministry. We highly appreciate these types of engagements, because people get to take something out of it. So I think as young people, especially in particular, the green hydrogen industries that are coming up, the mm-hmm. oil and gas sector, which is now very, very promising, we must take specific interest in those industries.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Right, that was Master Abednego Ekanjo from the Ministry of Mines and Energy. He's an economist within that Department of Mines. We are looking at putting everything together and what is happening at the moment. Namibia is being mentioned here and there, being one of the... We are in the process of being one of the richest country in Africa in terms of oil, and they are even suggesting that if we are to discover more of oil, as we are talking at the moment, Namibia might be the third richest country in oil in Africa after Libya and Nigeria. On the other side, the members of OPEC, the gurus, the mastermind, the heroes, the establishment, the veterans of OPEC, the organization of petroleum oil in the world, the organization that control oil in the world, they are already welcoming us. They are already welcoming us. They are already waving their hands to say that Qatar is already there. Like, Namibia, you are friends. We want you. We want to negotiate with you. We want to sign some agreement. You are promising. You are the smart child. It's funny, guys. I don't know how to explain this, man. But when it's coming to natural resources, it's something unique, okay? It's something unique in the manner that you find yourself as a certain country. People don't really know about you. People don't give anything about, they don't give a shit about you. But the moment they get something from, they get to know that you have something, you become an icon of the world, you become a topic of the day, you become, what I'm saying is, when this news breaks out, that 10 billion of barrels was discovered in Namibia, or in Namibia by the Portuguese company, it did not come from us. We break that news from London. And everybody was already coming on board to say that it's a little than behind the time, and my callers are just coming through now. Let me just listen to this, and we're gonna hand over to my colleague in Windhoek. Igelekem.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. What are you doing? Let's get to the topic of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let me just take a minute or two. Yes, thank you very much for the Economist, Mr. Ikanjo, who was there, helping us to understand and also make sense of our reasoning. Yes, when it comes to Angola,
mm-hmm.
and maybe let's say Namibia also included, in terms of oil discoveries and even green hydrogen, I think the last question was on that issue, and how we at least can benefit from those extractions of resources, maximizing our benefit. Yes, the other companies can maximize their profit, but for us, me and you, I believe we want to maximize the social benefits of our people. And I know the development, you mentioned about India, and you also mentioned about India, and India is interested into our green hydrogen product that we should be exporting to India. And imagine, India is one of the highly, so to say, developed country. So maybe Namibia will also assume to be developed and developing country, like South Africa. I know South Africa is on the two stages, developed industries and developing country. So Namibia should also assume the same status, because many a times we disregard what Namibia can do. Even most of our economists don't mention that. course, I'm grateful for Ekanjo because he mentioned that there are a lot of opportunities that we can tap on, despite our technical and our financial challenges.
That the bueno?
Yes, sir.
I'm behind the time.
Yeah, and because you gave us time over the last minute. Maybe you were out. So we can continue next time.
We get another moment. Thank you very much.
Right, 15 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock in the morning, and this was the Eagle Analysis with Rudolf Yembo. I was I was told English as a subject, but not a language. I grew up trying to know and understand English, but not as a language. But it was a subject to me up until I was really at a certain stage of my life. It's when I came to find out that English is actually not a subject, but a language. That's why, yeah, pardon me, we are struggling with a language, but it's a medium of instruction within the, it's in the world. We are trying our best. We just have to push, okay? But anyway, we are behind the time at the moment. And my colleague in Windhoek, that's Heleni, she's ready to take over from me, Rudolf Yembo. It was a great opportunity and a great moment being with you right here. Meet me again tomorrow on Omoeli. That's a Shiwambo program from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. Thank you very much for those that tune on and those that have participated in the program. We continue having this kind of conversation. We continue educating each other. We continue educating each other and entertaining each other at the same time. When it's coming to things that are happening in our society, in our country, and the world at large. Until next time, we shall meet again.
Your lives are